Welcome to GDN's Talking Comics interview. On today's show, we welcome artist Eric Nien and writer Scott Berman, the creative team behind the hilarious new 4-issue miniseries from Dark Horse Comics, White Savior. A biting and satirical look at the White Savior trope found in movies like Last Samurai and The Great Wall. Now, here's your host, Martin Sexton.
Welcome to another edition of GVN Talking Comics Interview. I am your host, Martin, and today I have the pleasure of talking to the creative team behind a book that very much reflects my style of humor, Dark Horse Comics' White Savior. This was one of those books, actually, that was brought to our attention by one of the creative team, actually, Eric, and he reached out to tell us about it, and I really love when that happens, because more often than not, because there are so many books out there, I might have missed it. But checking out the previews, Scott and Eric's script was very much in my wheelhouse of what I think is funny. And along with Eric's artistic talents, it soon became a must read. And I knew I needed to talk to them. So we're now 2 issues into the 4-issue miniseries. And I'm pleased to welcome the creative team behind this Dark Horse comic book, Eric Nien and Scott Berman, to the GVN's Talking Comics. How are we doing today, guys?
Doing good. How about yourself, Martin?
All right, doing well. Okay. All right. So since this is the first time we've had a chance to chat, I'm going to start a little bit about your creative backgrounds. And we're going to start with you, Scott. As far as writing goes, what made you take an interest in writing? And what style of writing was your initial goal starting out?
You know, it's super funny. Whenever people go with me first, I'm like, I am definitely the underwhelming one of the two of us, of Eric and myself. But I've been writing all my life pretty much. And I think this is the first one that's getting some attention. And so I think writing is comparatively easier than getting attention is. And so I just enjoy telling stories, putting them out there in the world, and I wish I had a cooler answer, but I leave the cool stuff to Eric, and then I can butt in accordingly.
Okay, then since he's tossing it to you, Eric, when did you take an interest in comic art, and which creators inspired you to pursue that calling?
Thank you for having us. It's great to be here. It's a nice chilly Saturday, so I guess that. I've been doing this for a long time, it seems. Man, it goes by so quick. Who got me into comics? Of course, everyone knows Todd McFarlane. He's probably by far the most influential in my opinion, in my terms. Got me in there when I was still in high school reading comic books, you know, and Todd McFarlane changed everything. From there, I've always dabbled in art, drew and all that stuff. And it was because of the success he's made available for everyone else. I think Todd McFarlane is the one that got me into comics. I've been drawing for so long. I went to Art Center College of Design as a industrial design major. Got out, did some gaming work at game studios, designing games for Xbox, AAA games like that. Then found myself doing side jobs in comics, and before I knew it, I met up with Rick Remender. We started doing creator-owned books and got my first book at Image called Strange Girl, which is by far still one of my favorite books I've ever done, because it was something that I didn't have any idea of what I was going to do. And so it just came to me. That's like my raw sort of take on comics. If I had no boundaries in comics. So I still think that's probably my favorite to this day. And then work for Marvel, DC, all that stuff. Good titles, Old Man Logan, The Weekend Starboy, and here we are. I decided to do another creator-owned book called White Savior with my co-creator, who is white.
Okay. So you talk about you've done work, Eric. You've done work for Marvel and DC, and you've done some mainstream characters. Did at any time during when you're doing these, did you ever feel any kind of intimidated? Because I've talked to other creators who I'm drawing Batman, and of course Batman's got a set fan base. I don't want to screw it up. Did you ever deal with any of that?
Oh yeah, definitely. That's one of the things about doing these mainstream books. You don't want to, but it just happens that you'll get sort of influenced by what you think readers might want or editors might want. And so a lot of times your artistic ability, for me personally, I go through this stage where I say, okay, what would the readers want or something? And sometimes that might not be the right approach. So I don't know, you know, my style changes all the time depending on the book that I do, whether it's a dark, gritty book or a fun, cartoony book. But sometimes I think I change maybe too much, where style-wise, nothing can be pinpointed to a certain style, which in some respects is great if you're if you love just variety and doing different projects. But it might be a drawback if you want people to know what your quote unquote style is. So, yeah.
Okay. So now I was, of course, in preparation for this, I was reading through previous interviews, and Scott, I read that you had let Eric read a script called How I Got Drunk and Saved the World. That sounded actually very interesting to me. So can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, How I Got Drunk and Saved the World. So I'm working on it with another artist now. A lot of times, so I found Eric by sending him this script, and he was busy, and so I had another artist start it. And one of the problems you run into when trying to create comics is if you get an artist starting it, they might not finish it. And so you have an artist start it, they get busy, they can't finish it, it takes years and years. But I luckily just hopped on board with another artist who's almost finished with the first issue now, How I Got Drunk and Saved the World. So it's about a alcoholic, degenerate ex-superhero. And when I say ex-superhero, he was basically on the Avengers of this world, if you will, for about 2 weeks. But he was such a drunken, degenerate screw-up that they kicked him off. And now it's 20 years later, and the government pays him not to use his superhero powers because he's such an embarrassment to the superhero community. So as long as he doesn't use his powers, he gets paid. Of course, something comes up. He has to use his powers. He finds out one of his many illegitimate children is destined to destroy the world, and he's the only one who can stop him. So How I Got Drunk and Saved the World, we're hoping comes out fairly soon, but we're still kind of talking, seeing what happens with White Savior, and hopefully the prices for getting this one will skyrocket because of the success of White Savior. That's the general plan.
All right. Okay, so since we're talking about White Savior, and it's the main reason we're talking, as I told you, I made it pretty clear that I love this book and find it hilarious. Pretty much from, and it's not just like I find it just funny and then move on. I find it funny almost throughout, which to me is very rare. So tell me about how, I don't care who answers necessarily, tell me how this premise came about and what were your goals as you were trying to work through the story?
All right, Pitch Man, you go for it.
So it's really funny how Eric and I decide who answers which questions. And so usually when we're talking about the plot of the book, it comes to me because you have to talk about how the white guy is an idiot. And it comes much better for me than Eric. And when we talk about representation and diversity, I usually toss it on over to Eric there. But we were just brainstorming ideas. And this was around the time the movie The Great Wall with Matt Damon came out. And we were just tossing around ideas. And we said, what if the guy who's destined to save everybody is an idiot? And so from there, we kind of just liked the general idea. Despite what a lot of people think, Eric and I aren't as, politically motivated as one would think. We just wanted to tell a funny story. And then we kind of tapped into the, oh, wait a minute, there is something going on with white saviors here. And we could really spoof this this thing. And from there, we kind of came up with the idea. We wrote a general script and outline together. And then Eric would draw it. And then we would kind of come together and put like as many jokes on the page as possible. And one thing, when we did the first issue, we were kind of looking at it, and I was, and we were kind of going, it's, you know, it needs to get it, the jokes on the page need to be a little crazier and a little funnier to match what's going to happen in the following issues. And so I think that actually more than anything else might have influenced the comedy of the book, if you will. We said we need to make it, we need to make the beginning crazier to match the craziness of what follows, because the craziness of what follows, I think, is, let's just say, pretty interesting without spoiling too much over here.
And I thought it was interesting. It's funny that you said that, because as I was reading through it and reading some of the dialogue, I kept thinking, said, this looks like possibly maybe once Eric did the drawing, you went in there, it's okay, so now let's go ahead and insert this. Let's go ahead and insert, because my brother and I actually work the same kind of way. We just see pictures and we just start thinking, okay, what would be funny? And that's kind of probably what appeals to me most about it. So was there anything that you put out there that you decided, okay, no, we maybe not be able to do that, like got left on the cutting room floor?
Well, there's a lot that we had to shave off to fit a 4-issue series. Initially, Scott had all sorts of ideas, and we had it up to like 8 issues or something like that. And there's lots of segues, stories, and backstories that we had to trim it down for 4 issues. You know, there's that, I don't know, we want to save the Dark Savior story, but we have offshoots that we will throw into the notes here and there, you know, just to let people know that there's other potentials out there, other spinoffs that we want to do.
Yeah, so I think long story short, we have about double the material that we can use, and we hope when this takes off that we will use it.
So that's actually good news. And actually, I was going to bring that up, and I still will toward the end here. Okay, so I did notice, though, I mean, Eric, for the most part, even though, you know, the humor and the dialogue is out there, your drawings are still...
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
Not, I mean, you don't lean toward trying to do anything crazy funny. I mean, a lot of it's still pretty serious as far as the drawing goes. Was that done intentionally, or is that something you kind of worked out as you went?
It's probably just something that I worked out as it went. I'm not quite sure what you mean by a little crazier. I don't know. It just felt like, you know, just for pacing out each scene, sometimes it just landed the way it did. I would have loved to have more room for, you know, better splashes and stuff. But, you know, we are limited to, we even extended issues to, like, I think it was 26 pages, or is it 24, 24 pages per issue, something like that. I actually had to email the editors, hey, can we add a couple more pages here and there? And so, they go, hey, sure. you know, you can add as many pages as you want. But so we had to add a couple pages here and there just to get things paced out correctly.
Okay. So now I, you know, in my initial review, I had compared White Savior to Mel Brooks or Monty Python. And of course, those are two favorites of mine. And the comparison still stands strong, even as I've read through the second book. And mainly because it just, like them, it looked like that you didn't have, you know, you just kind of let your comic mind flow. You didn't kind of hold back on anything. So was it that your goal going in is to kind of resemble that kind of humor, or was you just, you know, doing what you thought was funny and hope the fans took to it the way I did?
Yeah, we just did what we thought was funny, that we could do that was funny. We try to push the extreme to what we wanted to say, so that it borderline, you know, if it went too far or not. I don't think we went far enough. Scott thinks we went far enough. I'm always trying to push the jokes here and there. And
well, so the two funny things about this. So we didn't intentionally think like Mel Brooks or Monty Python, but I think our minds just go there from what we just, what we like. And so it wasn't intentional, but then we look back and we go, yeah, it does have a Blazing Saddles-ish Holy Grail feel to it. And as for the extremes of the comedy, it's really funny that I was always scared. I would always be like, we can't put this. I would say something crazy and then immediately take it back. And then Eric would be like, no, we got to put that in and we got to push it further. And I'm like, Eric, I don't want to get murdered. I'm with the white savior. We got to be careful. Eric had zero fear, whereas I was the opposite, literally every day, fearful of what kind of crazy nonsense we're going to put into this this book.
Okay, so, you know, we're talking about some of the scenes. So I'm going to bring up a couple examples that initially jumped out at me. And right at first is the big battle scene right when, get my head straight here, when Todd had just fallen into the scene and, you know, they were going at, and people off on the side as they were getting injured were crying out what part of their body got hurt. And say, to be honest with you, that kind of brought me back to Monty Python, the Holy Grail. Of course, when the Black Knight is fighting King Arthur, of course, the Black Knight is totally saying, okay, no, you didn't hurt me. You cut my arm off. It's a flesh wound. But these guys are crying out every little body part that got killed, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah. And I think that was another instance of Eric had drawn it and we had basically, we were just going to put, this is the battle and maybe I'm going to kill you, something like that. And then after we did the first issue, we kind of paused and went, well, this thing isn't crazy and crazy enough. We got to let people know what's coming. We got to amp up the comedy. And so we just kind of went page by page and said, let's just throw the jokes on this thing and go nuts with it. It's interesting that we don't a lot of times think about these things. They kind of just happen, and then we go, oh, yeah, that's why we did it. We don't realize why we're doing it, though.
I say, and another scene, of course, when Zedediah Grant arrives at Castle Kunu to visit Kinzo, and he's going into this long-winded spiel about his fork, about how he loves the fork because he likes to stab people with it. Okay, so that one actually reminded me of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, where he's talking about, said he was going to cut Robin's heart out with a spoon, and his cousin asked him, well, why a spoon, cousin? Because it's dull, it'll hurt more. And that's actually what I was thinking of when he was talking about how he loved to stab things with his fork and talking about how he was trying, how cutting a steak with a pair of chopsticks doesn't work.
Yeah, with jokes like that, with the, you know, there's always this long running joke about chopsticks versus forks and the utility of it and stuff. And even to this day, you know, I make jokes all the time about, you know, me being Asian, still using chopsticks on items. I mean, you see people eating chopsticks, Cheetos with chopsticks and stuff. I mean, it for me, those types of stuff, I think it's funny.
Also, that scene was also where when he came in, he said that he killed 60 of his men and beheaded them to kind of celebrate his coming, because he said Americans enjoyed that kind of unnecessary violence. But again, just a little offshoot off to the side, you hear the guys getting killed, but they're talking after they're supposedly dying, saying that they killed me. So, yeah, they couldn't have killed you. You're still talking. Well, they beheaded me. And again, the kind of stuff I just find hilarious.
Well, thanks.
Okay, so, you know, you talk about all this extra stuff that you have for the book. If this is well received, do you see yourself doing another volume of it?
If they let us, if they want it, definitely. We're hoping, we're in talks with a lot of good people, and man, I hope we do get a chance to explore it either in comics or in TV. More stories about the whole white savior. White savior tropes and all these the other issues that come that we're playing with throughout the whole series.
Is TV a possibility?
Oh, I hope so. fingers and toes crossed.
Yeah, we're talking to people, but the problem is you never know where these talks go. You know, they promise the world and then deliver you like a little lima bean or something. So we're still trying to navigate that world and figure it out.
Right. So was Dark Horse the only comic that you presented it to, or did you present it to any other publishers?
Dark Horse was the one that jumped on very quickly when we sent it to them. We sent it to a few others, but when we got the email from Dark Horse, we were like, Dark Horse. That was kind of like a no brainer. You know, they have such great affiliation with Netflix and how they're able and experienced to taking properties to as from a comic book source to something more. And so, I mean, Dark Horse has been fantastic in for us so far. So,
if it went to television, do you have any kind of, you know, I know this is way in advance, but do you have any kind of casting people you could see in the different roles that you have?
We do, but I think for us, it's smarter to let people who know what they're doing in that realm to pick out the right people to make it the best it can be.
But you do have an idea of who you would like to see.
We throw out here names here and there and stuff like that.
We're scared now of throwing out names that we haven't talked to and those that we have, and so we want to make sure we're not offending anybody or promoting anybody
or excluding anyone too.
Yeah, you excluding. Know. Yeah.
Listen, all right, very good. Okay, so that's pretty much what I got for it, but before I let you go, I want to give you an opportunity to share any other projects that you have coming up, and where can fans follow each of you, either on social media or on the web?
Fans of the comic book and everything, we do have an Instagram, White Savior Comic, right?
We always have to remember the name of it, because Instagram, and I'm looking at it on my other computer, Instagram is White Savior Comic. Twitter is White Savior Book, because you couldn't fit comic into it, apparently.
Okay.
Yeah, those.
And as far as any other projects you might have coming up?
We're pitching stuff here and there. Hopefully we'll get on some we'll get on some books from Marvel or DC. Once the editorials at Marvel and DC see what we can do as far as a writing team, or even Scott's ability to write, I think Scott's going to blow up in the comic book industry.
I told him to say that
for the record. As a premier writer. I've told many times in other interviews. I have a lot of experience reading scripts and everything and doing comic book work. The reason why I partnered up with Scott, who really didn't have a body of work in comics, but his writing as far as other and other places where he really dealt with comedy, the work that he's going to present is going to be really good for the comic book industry. I mean, his style of writing, I think, is very enjoyable. And so hopefully, for example, we're pitching things at Marvel. If they get it on the right book, we can really make it a great, funny book.
Eric, you got to really just push a little harder for me. No.
I'll make a campaign. Hire Scott Berman.
It usually this started the other way around, because when we first started doing podcasts and interviews, Eric didn't want to do any. He didn't want to talk. And I was like, Eric, we got to get out there. And I'm like, Eric, I was always Eric's pitch man, his Flavor Flav. I'm like, Eric is the best in the business and everything like that. Because Eric he's not like me. Eric's very humble, and and I am not humble at all, but I will pretend to be every now and then. And so I've always been Eric's Flavor Flav, just his pitch man, his hype man. And so it's just been really great just with the two of us. Just the amount of trust Eric has in me, I should trust him. I mean, I have no reason not to, but the fact that he trusts me is just always mind-boggling to me, I always say.
Actually, I'd be kind of surprised that Eric would, like I say, he's been doing comics a long time, that this kind of thing would be old hat to him. But it's always good to have a good PR man who's willing to talk. So you're doing good there. All right. Well, I appreciate it, fellas. And I will be, of course, following the rest of White Savior very closely, because, like I said, I love the book. And I'll be hopefully following whatever comes out your way in the future.
Awesome. Well, thank you for having us. It's always a pleasure talking to people.
All right. Well, I thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to GVN's Talking Comics. Please come back again. Talking Comics is a production of Geek Vibes Nation.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.